You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. This is, of course, Matthew Raphael Johnson. Today is Wednesday, August 13th, 2025. And we're going to go back to a familiar topic. We're going to talk about the regime in Lebanon. The first civil war started there, April 13th, 1975. And it came close to destroying the country entirely. The United States and the Israelis, they're pushing for another. It's connected to Lebanon's disastrous economic condition because bailout assistance is tied to the demand that the Lebanese army disarm Hezbollah, which frankly it can't do. A civil war is imminent. Lebanon is an excellent example of how the regime, the Great Reset, functions in day-to-day practice. It lives and breathes on violence and deception. We all know that Hezbollah opened a second military front against Israel not too long after the Hamas invasion, daily launching rockets from Lebanon at military targets in northern Palestine for more than a year. They're aware that the IDF is very overstretched. It's manpower and problems like desertion. They're lying about their casualties, all this. They're in serious trouble. So they wanted to limit its capacity to wage war on Gaza. The Hezbollah assault forced the Israeli government to evacuate 70,000 Israeli settlers and occupied Palestine near the Lebanon border. Of course, the Jewish media will always say that Hezbollah is the aggressor and Israel the victim. That's becoming less and less common, although in the media, groups like Hezbollah are always a terror group, no matter how they may, you know, symbolically criticize Israel. They only attacked Israeli military sites starting October 8th. Hezbollah was shelling military sites in Tel Aviv between October 7th and September 6th, 2024. Tel Aviv was attacking much more severely. In fact, in that time period, Israel was responsible for 82% of all attacks on either side of that divide. On this program, I've dealt with the Israeli invasion of Lebanon and what it was purported to do. It was a terrorist attack. We see that in the pagers, the walkie-talkies. Thousands of men, civilians, were set afire by the explosions. Second round of explosions the following day. Maimed many more. They flattened, the Israelis, they flattened Lebanese villages, bombing escape routes, ambulances. They attacked, if you remember my show from, I don't know, last month, 2 months ago. They tried to destroy the UN presence there. They killed many journalists, medical personnel. They carpet bombed entire neighborhoods. They set fire to olive groves. They used poison gas, well, white phosphorus and cluster bombs as well in civilian areas, displacing about a fifth of Lebanon's population. Just a month of bombing, Israel killed maybe 4,000 Lebanese, that's the official number, destroyed 32 villages, and of course, as we all know, assassinated the much of the leadership of Hezbollah. It was a terror attack and wasn't meant to do much else. But when Israel launched its ground attack, Hezbollah alone stood firm. They stopped the Israeli attack. Israel called for the ceasefire without reaching its military gains, unless, of course, you believe that its only purpose was to terrorize, which, of course, is true. At least its public aims were not reached. There was a ceasefire on November 27th, 2024, concerning Lebanon. But the war just entered a new phase. It's a clear indication that Israeli objectives had not been achieved. Yes, Hezbollah was damaged, but so was Israel. By now, they have regained their strength. They're more popular than ever. Yes, it was a terror invasion, but it was barely able to secure a toehold in South Lebanon. Of course, the fall of President Bashar al-Assad government was disastrous. And keep in mind, there is no functional government in Syria. Whoever they claim runs Syria, runs maybe a couple of blocks in Damascus, and that is it. They don't control the country. But they, as I've said since Assad fell from power, they made no secret of their intention of supporting Israeli aims. That was a huge blow to the Palestinian resistance. Even in Lebanon, though, all of a sudden, there's a faction, financed by the West, that is concerned with a government that has a monopoly on physical violence, which is the old traditional definition of a state. A state is that entity that has a monopoly on physical force. But that's not normally the case in Lebanon. It has become a basket case economically. Huge brain drain, huge financial drain. But for anyone to say that Hezbollah has been damaged beyond repair, or that they have collapsed, that is pure fantasy. I said it before, Hezbollah's organization, it's very decentralized. It doesn't have your traditional military model, even a guerrilla model. It's intertwined with the society around it. It's very popular. There's no way to deliver a decisive blow unless you just slaughter everybody. There's a brand new leadership that's always being prepared. They're well aware of Mossad's capability and assassination. They're always being groomed and prepared to take over and have largely regained their strength. Hezbollah expresses the cultural identity of the society in the face not only of external threats but internal threats. It's not a separate entity. It's not a thing. It's part of the daily life. Many Orthodox people around the world are full supporters of Hezbollah. Politically speaking, of course. The resistance is built within this entire social fabric of South Lebanon. The regime's disinformation, psychological warfare has failed miserably. The massive... their voting tallies, their popularity, their supporters, at least on paper, control the Lebanese parliament. Now, unfortunately, those coalitions are very, very fragile, but they're a popular group. But during the war itself, Hezbollah began its restructuring. It can do this at that decentralized level. And that was accelerated after November 27th. Very flexible in more than one area. With the new Secretary General, Sheikh Naim Qassem, took over and functioned no different than Nasrallah. killing the head doesn't kill the organization at all. And clearly, the behavior of Israel and the U.S. suggests that Hezbollah is, or has, rebuilt its military capacity. It has an extensive infrastructure. Hezbollah remains popular, and its own propaganda points to the methods that the West uses. You know, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, of course, is sent against them. The Lebanese state has always been secondary to the sectarian movements. This is a place where diversity has been nothing but a problem. Hezbollah, however, is popular across, even among Christians and Sunnis. In fact, Hezbollah is large enough that it's really holding society together in the South, since the state has largely collapsed. It hasn't responded to the crisis over the last few years, let alone the Israeli invasion, which only makes Hezbollah and their allies even more popular. But no one was more damaged than the Israeli Defense Forces. They're fighting a war on three fronts. All attempts to isolate and bypass it in crucial circumstances have failed miserably. There is no collapse of Hezbollah. Yes, they were damaged. That's because they were alone fighting the Israelis. The Lebanese army refused to fight. Israel's in serious trouble. It's this meat grinder defense in South Lebanon. Their invading troops couldn't move more than a few hundred yards across the border. Of course, they lie about their casualties. You got to multiply at least by 5, maybe 10. Right away, in one 24-hour period, Israel lost dozens of tanks and hundreds of men, several of them high-ranking officers. Hezbollah still rains missiles down on the occupied territories, way beyond the range of previous wars, by the way. They're going beyond Haifa. The resistance is dug into a network of tunnels, just like Hamas. And don't forget the level of motivation, highly trained. Decades of guerrilla war, and they're familiar with every square inch of the place. They're all from South Lebanon. It's not unusual for every household to own a collection of weapons spanning the years. Every household has something, a Kalashnikov somewhere, maybe an old one from the 60s or 70s, Lee Enfield rifles. They have modern weapons. Everywhere you go, there's resistance. This is a clear case where this kind of a war, unless Israel nukes all of South Lebanon, they can't win. They were clearly defeated in 2006. They didn't want to repeat that. But at a minimum, it was a draw last year. Now, as far as the parliament is concerned, they have a unicameral a parliament of 128 members. And it's extremely complex how things are done. Hezbollah is connected with their allies, or, you know, the Progressive Socialist Party, the Armenians, the Ba'ath Party, Amal, the Social Nationalists, and a group called Loyalty to the Resistance. As of now, they make up 64 out of the 128 members of the legislature. And there's about 47 independents that occasionally support them. They are legitimately popular, but these coalitions are insecure. In 2005, where the, you know, pro-Western or anti-Syrian opposition took power, voter turnout was something like 40%, even lower. The last election, 2022, was over 60%. And keep in mind that the law states that half the parliament has to be Christians, the other half Islamic, 64-64. There's a new electoral law, which I cannot get into, but you have to have the proper confessional distribution. Still, though, Lebanon is a failed state. Very little has been done help Lebanon. There's been a series of events that has simply destroyed the Lebanese economy. And they're not the only ones. From 2008 on, it's been one blow after another. At this point, financial elites have fled the country. I mentioned hyperinflation. 2023 was 200%. And of course, in March 2020, they defaulted on their loans. If you remember, I did a whole show on the explosion of the Beirut port in 2020. Not to mention the COVID nonsense. And, of course, Israel's invasion. But it has everything to do with the IMF model. It has everything to do with oligarchy, neoliberalism. There was a time where Beirut was an extraordinary place. Skyscrapers. After the Civil War ended, 1990-91, neoliberalism took over. These skyscrapers, unfortunately, were built with debt. Very quickly created a bubble. Corruption seeped into all elements of the system. To attract some money back, banks were offering remarkable interest rates for new deposits, especially of dollars. This is a very dollarized economy, by the way. It created a bubble. For the 2018 election, nothing was really done. This bubble had to burst. Foreign donors all over the world held back billions of dollars they had pledged. And I think the final spark was the plan to tax the WhatsApp calls in October of 2019. At least that's the claim. That was the final thing. There was a long list of things, but Lebanon had very low taxes. Now, there was color revolutionary aspects of the October 17, 2019 movement, but there were legitimate causes there. It's a bit ambiguous in Lebanon's case. Dollars exited Lebanon quickly. Banks didn't have money to pay depositors. They shut their doors. The government default was huge. Before the crisis, the Lebanese currency, roughly 1,500 to the dollar. That went up to 23,000 in 2022. As of today, it's about 90,000. The Beirut explosion in 2020, which was huge, killed 215 people. I covered this on this show, including connected with Mossad. Its spending didn't decrease. Some estimates have the debt of the country at 500% of GDP in 2021. That's come down a little bit. So there was this parasitic relationship between the financial sector and the state. These deficits came from, they were driven by high interest rates, overspending, corruption in public works, capital investments. Summer of 2019, the liquidity crisis hit. And then, of course, the nonsense, pandemic nonsense, the absolute garbage. I can't even shut down the entire economy, the port explosion, the war, and of course, the Israeli invasion. We're looking at a poverty rate as of right now. It's the number, it really depends on who you read. Middle class accounts for less than maybe 30% of the population, but the poverty rate is said to be 80%. So that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The Lebanese pound was devalued 95% against the dollars I've mentioned. Food prices from 2019 to 2022 went up 1,000%. Lebanon didn't have many taxes. No personal, or minimal personal or corporate income taxes. They now are at roughly 25% on average. So who comes in but the IMF? Here's what the IMF said in June of this year. His report after his visit to Lebanon, the Lebanon mission. And I want you to listen carefully because this is a
very good example on how to decode bureaucratic or semi-intellectual speech, breaking it down into what it really means. Deconstruction. Here's what he says. Oh, this is official IMF. The IMF mission held productive discussions with the Lebanese authorities on a comprehensive economic reform program aimed at restoring macroeconomic sustainability and supporting financing for reconstruction. These initial discussions covered several reform areas, including 1, restoring the viability of the banking sector and protecting depositors to the maximum extent possible, 2, achieving fiscal and debt sustainability while enhancing social safety nets and rebuilding institutional capacity, 3, establishing credible monetary and exchange rate policy frameworks, 4, strengthening governance and transparency in the financial sector, that is, 5, enhancing the anti-money laundering and combating the financing of terrorism regime, and 6, reforming state-owned enterprises. There's a lot. I could do 10 shows on what's packed into that paragraph. An important fact is that the Lebanese Central Bank is 100% state-owned. That becomes very important. The regime wants to privatize it or just take over its assets. The IMF, of course, is demanding austerity. Now, the word transparency, in its true form, it means Western control over Lebanon's finances, the end of its sovereignty. It had secrecy laws like Switzerland used to have, or I guess still does have. Transparency means that everyone can see it, everyone can take part in it, which means that Western banks can dominate. Line 5, the terrorism thing. It comes down to the destruction of Hezbollah and its allies. Line 6, about state-owned enterprises. The regime wants to strip the country of its remaining value by selling off state assets to Western oligarchs, very much like you saw in Ukraine. As days go by, even right now, the IMF is continuously toughening its conditions for the $11 billion, I think, or $14 billion is what they're promising. It's weird how, for decades, they had zero conditions for the billions it sent to Ukraine, and they never saw again. They're trying to pin the blame on a guy named Riyad Salameh. For 30 years, governor of the Central Bank of Lebanon. He is certainly a scapegoat. He's been arrested. I think he's still awaiting trial. He skipped bail at one point. But over those 30 years, he became very wealthy. I think he was wealthy already. He worked for Merrill Lynch. And most central banks do get wealthy in that position. And the man was appointed for 4 terms. He kept control over inflation. But The Economist calls him the world's worst central banker. That might mean the banker we can't control. Strangely, with all of how evil he is, he remains a member of the Board of Governors, the IMF, the Arab Monetary Fund. In 2012, he chaired the annual meetings of the IMF and the World Bank Group in Tokyo. Now, he's yet to be convicted of anything. But the IMF didn't seem to have any problem until very, very recently, suggesting that this is Israeli pressure. The protests a few years ago had his picture, as if, you know, they were burning his picture and stuff. He's the problem. The head of the bank. After 30 years, he suddenly decides to steal all this cash. So he hasn't been convicted of anything as of right now. I'm one of the few people who've noticed that in 2020, Nasrallah realized that the Chinese had an interest in the Lebanese economy. The Chinese were willing to step in and not have all of these conditions. There were talks about Chinese firms investing up to $12 billion in ports, railroad, power generation, waste management. And the media, on the one hand, was saying that this was a pipe dream, could never happen. Lebanon has nothing to offer, you know. Yet David Schenker, the former Assistant Secretary of State, was quoted as saying that Lebanon could soon get sanctioned by the Trump administration for hinting that China had an alternative motives for its investments. That's a strange response if it's impossible or a pipe dream. Don't forget, Lebanon's China's largest trade partner and part of her Belt and Road project. Most of the articles on the Chinese connection here say that her bailout program was, you know, simply non-viable. But going back to 2017, the Chinese were interested in its Tripoli port turning into an important hub for its BRI project, Belt and Road project, connected to its reconstruction plans in Syria, its connection to the Mediterranean Sea, to revive the Beirut-Tripoli railway as part of the rider connectivity, which was part of the Lebanese and Syrian railway systems into the Belt and Road, to rebuild all of these. The China Arab Association for Promoting Cultural and Commercial Change was a part of this. And the head of it said that China is ready to support Lebanon and offering an alternative bailout. Now, that's kind of fallen by the wayside. I haven't come across it recently. But it's not like the IMF is the only game in town, although the people who speak for Lebanon, especially the president, act as if it is. It's important to keep in mind, you know, Israel has always talked about wiping Lebanon off the map, turning the clock back 20 years, turning it to the Stone Age. But that kind of language, they do it because they're terrified of Hezbollah. They've already demonstrated their capacity, especially now when Israel is so divided. The army is stretched thin. And of course, they're lying through their teeth about casualties, not to mention the fact that much of Israel has been pummeled by Iranian missiles. The one thing, I don't care what background you have, there may be a few corrupt Maronites, but most Lebanese, when it comes down to preserving national sovereignty, Sunni, Shiite, Druze, whatever, they'll support the militia that preserves the border from the Zionist threat. That's the one thing they're always going to come together for. Hence, you can't get any more popular than Hezbollah. So, instead of China, Lebanon's government has declared its intention to negotiate a new program with the IMF. A comprehensive restructuring of the public sector, based on an updated framework, which is just nonsense speak for asset stripping. They claim that unless the banking sector is privatized, there is no such thing as economic recovery. But when the Lebanese government said the Lebanese state will exercise full authority over all of its territories, that means a lot more in Lebanon than it does elsewhere. It suggests that the militias, and by militias we mean Hezbollah, have to be disarmed. And in fact, that's central to aid, whether it be from the U.S., the IMF, or anywhere. It's not just financial recovery, but given their substantial power in parliament, it's probably not going to happen. The IMF is dealing with the Prime Minister, Nawaf Salam, and the President, and a handful of bureaucrats. It started when the Lebanese government convened August 5th to deliberate and discuss the very sensitive issue of disarmament, disarming the militias. Of course, Hezbollah wants nothing to do with it. Labor minister, finance minister want nothing to do with it. The state demands the disarming of Hezbollah because it's being forced to say that, but it can't do it. It doesn't have the capacity. And Hezbollah largely has ignored it. There's Israeli occupation of 5 strategic points along the southern border. There's regular attacks on Hezbollah's personnel and infrastructure there. Israel claims that if Hezbollah is disarmed and replaced by the Lebanese army, they'll pull back. And of course, there's not any reason whatsoever to trust them in that regard. three people involved here. And these are, it's striking. And we've come across this before. The people who the U.S. sends to negotiate are incredibly ignorant. They have a lot in common. The three here, Amos Hochstein, Morgan Ortegas, and Tom Barak. These three people, they have a lot in common. They're elite. They're loved by the media, generally speaking. They go from one elite job to another. They don't really seem to have the capacity for, especially Morgan. You see this all over the place. We talked about the Thailand thing. These young Thai, you know, billionaires kids who just get one prestigious job after another. They have no preparation for any of them. Morgan Ortegas is kind of, it's funny if it wasn't so deadly. She's a former beauty queen airhead. She knows nothing about the area. Her education's in business. Like all of these people, the other thing they have in common, they all go back and forth between government and private jobs. Especially in her case, she has no business in having it. She was with Fox News for a while. But she converted to Judaism. That may have helped a little bit. Venerated by the media. She ran for Congress in Tennessee, and the Republican Party there disqualified her because she just moved to the state. Which, of course, is a very good reason to disqualify someone. Hillary Clinton did the same thing in New York when she ran for Senate, but this would have been an installation. Lebanese president is named Joseph Aoun, and she met with him, and she told him that she was very much opposed to Hezbollah's role in Lebanon's government because it's terrorizing the Lebanese people. Despite the fact that they have a huge portion in parliament and remain popular. So the Lebanese presidency tried to downplay it. She didn't really mean it like that. She's an idiot. Hochstein is a Democrat, close to natural gas concerns, actually born in Jerusalem. He was part of the Naftogaz scandal in Ukraine, rocked the Biden administration. So the prime minister emphasizes that the stability of Lebanon hinges on unifying the military's role, consolidating all the militias under state control. The French embassy, you know, the former colonial master, said that that was a good idea. We're going to support the Lebanese armed forces. And I have to mention, the Lebanese armed forces are in no condition to do anything. As of right now, the Lebanese army stands at about 100,000 very poorly trained men. They got rid of conscription a few years ago. They have excellent special forces. I will give them that. They have zero combat experience, believe it or not. They ran from the Israelis, leaving Hezbollah alone to fight them. They have very few tanks. Their navy has a couple of patrol boats, and that is it. Their air force has no fighters or bombers. Lebanese, the average salary is about $150 a month. And when you have inflation of, you know, 400% a year, that's no money at all. And that's what's supposed to take over here. Hezbollah will destroy them. But that would be civil war. Lebanese government can't remove the weapons from Hezbollah. They never will. Head of the army is named General Haykal. He wants to coordinate with what he claims are Syrian authorities. There's some claim that there's going to be some disarmament scam go on, but the army simply can't do it. They're going to be destroyed. Hezbollah is trying to keep this from happening. He's trying to talk to the military. You know, Hezbollah is rock hard. They're battle hardened. The handful of Lebanese soldiers, they simply don't have the capacity to take over here. They're trying to claim that, well, Hezbollah has been weakened by the invasion, but that was a while ago now. That's been exaggerated. And since when has the West given a damn about this? They've never once called for, you know, one single Lebanon, one single army. But Lebanon is very dependent. She's totally reliant on imports. 86% of her food, for example. She has no real reserves. It was back in January that Trump appointed the poor Morgan Ortega's special envoy for peace in the Middle East. Can you believe it? She probably was with Jared Kushner, with, in quotes. Her husband is Jewish, very powerful Jewish lawyer. She walks over there in her high heels. She doesn't really know anything. She went to the army commander, Rodolphe Haykal. And it was very upsetting. She was very Karenish, very arrogant, very undiplomatic. She insulted the former militia head, Wally Jumblatt, ex-member of parliament. She eventually was reassigned. The Israelis loved her. But she went over there very much like a Karen, making wild claims. She didn't know anything. If you remember, that mirrors the recent scandal in Thailand over the phone call with Hun Sen. Now this is where Tom Barak comes in. He allegedly has Lebanese ancestry. He headed Colony Capital, but has zero connection to Lebanon whatsoever. He was Ortega's successor. And he's out of his depth too. These guys go back and forth, very high-powered private sector jobs, high-powered government jobs. And when they speak and when they write, they don't seem to have any functional knowledge here. She was yelling, you know, Ortega was yelling at the general saying, how come Hezbollah hasn't been disarmed yet? I mean, she's utterly clueless. Israel has no intention of withdrawing. It doesn't matter whether Hezbollah is disarmed or not. Hezbollah does not want war with these people. And the entire thing is driven by Zionism. Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich used to talk about the Israeli expansion beyond Gaza and the West Bank, including parts of Lebanon. This is why it's very important for them. He says, this is a few years ago, today I could tell you in the clearest possible way that the IDF will not withdraw, and with God's help won't withdraw under any circumstances from the five positions where we are present in Lebanon. The Shiite villages that were destroyed will not be rebuilt. We promised this back when we signed the ceasefire deal. It was hard for many people to believe, but we're doing it. He, of course, meant that the villages that he destroyed, or that his army destroyed. So this civil war would serve Israeli interests very, very well. And he comes right out and says, no matter what Lebanon does, Israel's not going to withdraw. I think he may have a exaggerated understanding of what the IDF's capacities are. Lebanon demands guarantees from Washington that Israel's going to leave and stop the attacks, but either they simply don't know, or they're trying to force the diplomats to say something. They can't, of course. Washington doesn't tell Israel what to do. It's the other way around. Barak himself told the government that he couldn't guarantee anything. The U.S. can't force Israel to do anything. Which was a bad thing for Barak to say. This suggested, of course, the truth, that Tel Aviv gives orders to the Oval Office. And then at some point, Barak threatened Beirut that it may walk away from the whole thing entirely. That might be a blessing, in fact. So as far as the government in Lebanon is concerned, which, by the way, has a huge Hezbollah element, and their allies, too, which is a huge portion of the parliament. I'm not sure how they could disarm themselves. They are a huge portion of the Lebanese government, which is one reason it's not going to happen. But if they don't do anything, they're afraid that the war will resume against Hezbollah, which may be a good thing. Because Israel is far more weakened than Hezbollah is. Ceasefire, as I mentioned before, Lebanese army, such as it is, to replace Hezbollah on the border with Israel. You know, the Pentagon is the main financier of the Lebanese army. It's provided it with $3 billion in military aid starting in 2006. And that was only after Hezbollah defeated Israel. So now, suddenly, the Pentagon is very interested in the poor Lebanese army. The U.S. has trained about 32,000 Lebanese troops since then. And in fact, they're paid in dollar. They pay very poorly, but since 2023, they're paid in dollars. The only thing that they have worthwhile is their special forces, which are excellent. So I've been told. They have a lot of guys going through BUDS training with the SEALs. But I said, when Israel began its ground invasion of Lebanon, the Lebanese army fled. They would not fight Israel. It withdrew all of its soldiers and observation posts, leaving Hezbollah alone. And they stopped the Israeli invasion. That's because even after all the American assistance, the army didn't have the equipment nor the will to fight the Israelis. That's why they will never be the sole armed force of the country. The Lebanese army has never defended Lebanese sovereignty. Up until recently, the Pentagon has tried to keep the Lebanese army weak. The UN, if you look at the list of weapons that they receive, they're a mishmash from all over the world. You know, generations old. Many obsolete and different systems. No air defense whatsoever. They have no capacity to mount a significant confrontation against Israel. And of course, their officers are aware of this. As I've mentioned, the Air Force has no fighters or bombers. The Navy has, despite having a long coastline, has just a few patrol boats, and that is it. So they could say we're going to disarm Hezbollah. They could say it all they want, but it simply can't happen. So in November of 2024, Tom Barak said that President Donald Trump's administration is ready to help Lebanon build a future of economic development and peace with its neighbors. He means, of course, Israel. He then cited Marco Rubio that the U.S. aims to support a strong Lebanese state capable of confronting Hezbollah and disarming it. Well, they are a huge portion of the Lebanese state. What would Lebanon be without Hezbollah and their allies? It would be just an Israeli puppet and a sea of cheap labor. It would be just another West Bank. Of course, Israel will not withdraw from their five positions. It doesn't matter whether they're disarmed or not. Even if the Lebanese army assumes control, which it cannot do. And what's the army going to do if Israel refuses to leave? Israel automatically has air superiority. The Air Force has a few helicopters, maybe 20 or 25 of them. Barak actually then said at some point that maybe Hezbollah can be integrated within the armed forces of Lebanon. In fact, he said it was a very good idea, and that the Pentagon may increase funding for the Lebanese armed forces for that very purpose. Hezbollah cannot be eradicated, but maybe that's something we can do. Well, no one's endorsed that, but the idea is under consideration, as if they could simply force Hezbollah to do anything. But I really doubt they would like, you know, the 80,000 men of Hezbollah to be a part of really what a functional, you know, but almost an equal amount of soldiers in the Lebanese army. I think maybe 50, 60,000 men combat ready, even less than that, even fewer than that. There's probably more Hezbollah men, and they're certainly battle-hardened. The Justice Minister, Adel Nassar, said that the decision to disarm Hezbollah is final and irreversible under any circumstances. Well, he could call himself a giraffe, too. Doesn't make it real. But since they control a huge number, And again, the coalitions are fragile. They certainly have a majority of the parliament. Clearly, Hezbollah's weaponry is essential for Lebanon's defense and deterrence against Israeli aggression. The army won't do anything. It's been proven the army won't do anything. There were huge rallies against this in the southern suburbs of Beirut. Tom Barak, this fool who's been, again, just a millionaire who's been sent. He used to be a billionaire. He's not anymore. No education in this area. He says what he's told. Lebanon's going to be one nation, one army. The man lives in a country club fantasy world, just like the rest of them. Remember, this was never a concern of the United States before. In fact, a divided Lebanon was a good thing. Now, all of a sudden, it's not. Many of, not just Hezbollah, but Amal, many others, the Ba'ath Party, walked out of the chambers in protest. Which means the U.S. is demanding this. Using the IMF, the U.S. wants a full civil war in Lebanon. The loyalty to the resistance bloc, which is very, very large but not identical to Hezbollah, says that it's in violation of the National Pact and the Taif Agreement. The Taif Agreement guarantees Lebanon's right to self-defense. Well, the army will not defend, therefore the right to self-defense falls on Hezbollah. But despite the so-called ceasefire, Israeli drone and airstrikes continue across South Lebanon. Whatever is left of the civilian infrastructure is being destroyed. And it's a regular base. It's not huge numbers now because they're either gone or been killed. Hezbollah is now in the tunnel system, which is meant to compensate for their lack of air strength. You have people in Washington saying that if a new Lebanese civil war were to break out because of the Israeli pressure to disarm Hezbollah, the U.S. may invade Lebanon. Can you imagine? They tried to do it in 58 and 82. Can you imagine the U.S. trying to do that? The U.S. doesn't have the forces that it did back then. After October 23rd, 1983, it was very clear that they couldn't do it. But at least back then, they had the manpower and the will and the money to do it. Now they don't. Marine barracks bombed in Beirut back then, 241 American Marines killed, and yet no response was ever given. It was just taken. When does that happen? Clearly, that means that Mossad had to have something to do with it. Clearly, they must have, or else they would have had a scapegoat, and just because they do every other time. This is such strong proof that the U.S. takes orders from Israel. Israelis say, we're not leaving Lebanon. We'll do what we want. Just keep the money and the weapons flowing. And Trump says, okay. All told, about 400,000 deaths from constant Israeli attacks and incursions from the invasion day on to today is about a good number. It's not like they're against a ceasefire. They haven't been violating it, except in retaliation. But there is no way that they can give up weapons because Lebanon wouldn't have an army then. It would totally compromise Lebanon's sovereignty, of course, which is the point. So as it turns out, Hezbollah is the Lebanese army. If they went to the Chinese, if they went to the SCO, if they went to BRICS, there are alternative ways out here. China doesn't care about sanctions. Since when do they give a damn about American sanctions? The U.S. needs China far more than China needs the U.S. They're under sanctions anyway half the time. This would be a time for BRICS to come through and say the IMF is being outrageous. They're creating the conditions for a civil war. In fact, they might want a civil war. Here's our program for reform, bailout, whatever, that will not involve austerity, that will not involve the privatization of the central bank, that will not involve normalizing relations with Israel, which, by the way, is one of the stipulations, and certainly not the disarming of Hezbollah. this would be the perfect time. And I don't know if that's been made, if just no one's talking about it, if it's secret. It was made a few years ago. What a coup that would be for anybody. Any strong power to do. It's and yet it's not happening. BRICS would really show its mettle if it did something like that. The whole point of these alternative organizations is to be an alternative to the IMF and the World Bank. But this is the first case where the IMF is involved in calling for civil war, fully agreeing that they're not going to give money unless Hezbollah is disarmed, which means civil war, of course, and a civil war that the Lebanese army can't win. But nonetheless, it's going to mean a lot of dead Lebanese, which is fine by them, too. This is the first time that this is desperation. This is pain. This does not come from a position of strength. Lebanon is really no different than the U.S., economically speaking, except maybe for the inflation. There's been ongoing global depression since 2008. Of course, the IMF isn't necessary for Lebanon's recovery. The IMF is partly responsible for its destruction in the first place. Neoliberalism created all of this, as I discussed. We talked about last time, the Soros' betting on the bot in Thailand, and how it collapsed the East Asian economies, although only those that didn't have a state-controlled central bank. The Chinese weren't affected, Taiwan wasn't affected, but Japan, Thailand, Cambodia, South Korea were deeply affected. And the U.S. would go in and then buy up assets for pennies on the dollar. The Lebanese army is not going to take on Hezbollah. This is all just country club, airhead, beauty queen fantasizing. And it will go no farther than that. What ends up happening is another matter. But Hezbollah is the only thing holding South Lebanon together. It provides all the social services that the state cannot provide. Everything from jobs to food aid, medical aid, that's what they do. They're a social services organization that has a military wing. It's not just a military wing. They're a full government, and one far more legitimate than what sits in, at least as far as the president and the bureaucrats, sitting in Beirut. But talking about, that airhead, talking about the Lebanese government disarming Hezbollah, but Hezbollah is a huge portion of the Lebanese government. So this whole thing is based on ignorance and nonsense. It's shocking. It shouldn't be shocking, but it is shocking. And the people who they send over there, they have all these weird things in common. They're pushed from job to job. They have no real knowledge. They go back and forth from private sector to the public sector. They're all very wealthy. They're all totally isolated from reality. You, however, are not isolated from reality. I am not isolated from reality, and that sometimes is a very bad thing. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.